The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Are there 50 votes in the U.S. Senate for any kind of aggressive carbon pricing in the next couple of years? I mean, is that a viable conversation?
Right now, no. They want to have a conversation how we improve our climate and do it in a most responsible way. Yeah, they'd have one in a heartbeat. They want to talk about this as a penalty? Forget it. As long as I'm here and there's 50 votes and it takes 51 to pass it.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was a senator I have a lot of respect for. That Democratic senator from West Virginia, Joe Manchin, talking about opposition to a carbon tax. I'll fill you in on that coming up in just a moment. It actually gives me some pause when I think about what they're proposing. Congress may want to tax you by the mile. Now, you might be listening in your car right now to me. Imagine every mile you drive being taxed. Senator Schumer, a number of his allies are considering a plan that will implement a CO2 tax on every American. You, your wife, your husband, your kids, whoever, your siblings. And it could cost you, literally, and we'll talk about, I'll break it down. I won't get into it right now. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll dive into this. But it could cost you as much as $1,500 in additional taxes. So there is I hope it doesn't become a reality. And I hope people like Joe Manchin and others will say, hey, enough is enough. In fact, in the days ahead, I want to take a look at this $3.5 trillion spending bill and just look at what it means for the future. If it does, for some reason, gets passed, what does it mean for you and for your family, right? What's it mean for you and your family? Coming up a little bit later, we're trying to connect with Archbishop Coeur de Lion as well. And he's really asked us to pray for the conversion of Nancy Pelosi, to pray and fast for her. And I've never heard a bishop do this before, naming a particular politician. Now, of course, she's under his care, if you will. He's the shepherd in the diocese that she's in. But hopefully he'll join us at the bottom of the hour here, so stay with us. We'll look at this. There's so much unfolding, so much to get into. You may remember hearing about a bill in California that would remove a statue of St. Junipero Serra and replace it with honoring Native peoples, and I have no problem honoring Native peoples, but why remove a great champion of the Native people, Junipero Serra, right, this great saint? Well, the bill was signed by none other than Governor Gavin Newsom earlier this week, so the slanders and the lies about this great saint, St. Junipero Serra, they were put into the bill by the state legislature, and guess what? They are now officially part of California law. You know what we should do, too, is we should pray for the state of California. I know you're probably listening to me there right now. God bless such a beautiful state. It needs so much prayer. I mean, honestly, to do this to a man who the Catholic Church looked at and honored his life, a life of heroic virtue, to slander him like that, I think it's absolutely terrible. Pfizer has announced that if you've submitted, if you've got a child, let's say this, between 5 and 11, they might have to be vaccinated. Pfizer announced they've submitted their data on the testing done on kids, and they're hoping to get emergency use authorization for that age group within the next few weeks. So will you give your child the Pfizer vaccine if it gets the green light? If they get that emergency use authorization, the San Diego School District will like that. They've mandated that not just teachers, but now students age 16 and over, they have to get the shots. 16 and over. And they have up until December, I think it's December the 20th, it's probably the week before they go on vacation for Christmas, right, to get it done. Here's the thing, though. As a parent, right, shouldn't you have jurisdiction over the health care of your child up to they're at least an adult, 18? You're the primary educator. You're the provider for them. Why should a state say, especially when they are in high school, now we want to give them this vaccine? According to Fox News, eligible students not vaccinated for the deadline, they're going to have to do independent study. So I guess you do have an out, but I just don't think it's right. Imagine senior year. No, we're not going to give our kid the vaccine. So, okay, you don't get to participate. They won't be able to participate in sports, any other, after-school activity. And by the way, medical exemptions are not going to be allowed. Or religious exemptions or personal belief, right? You can't get out of it. If you don't get vaccinated, you don't come to school, right? So vaccine mandates for teachers have been an issue. Now they're happening for students as well, and for major school districts, including, as I pointed out, this high school, San Diego Unified. Here's a report from CBS. I'll give you a little bit more info.
We are going to do the right thing by our children, following the science.
And in the end, San Diego Unified School Board members say science guided their decision to mandate the COVID vaccine for eligible students and employees. While medical exemptions will be permitted, exemptions based on personal beliefs will not. Students who are not vaccinated without an exemption will be provided at-home learning options, while district employees who are not vaccinated risk termination. Leading up to the board's vote, parents had their say, one calling the board's decision an abuse of power.
You guys work for us, and we do not consent. We do not know the long-term effects of this vaccine, and I will not risk my children's health.
Have you really thought, what if it causes even one child to develop myocarditis or any other life-threatening side effect?
Every child, and I mean every single child, has the right to a free and equal education. Offering virtual school to the unvaccinated kids is not an equal education.
Tuesday night, a number of parents also spoke out in favor of the vaccine mandate.
Vaccine requirements for school have been commonplace for decades, and it is evidence-based in light of the COVID-19 pandemic, which has maimed and killed so many across the world, including children.
We need to keep all of our students, their families, and our staff alive and healthy.
Now, under district guidelines, all eligible employees as well as students 16 and over will be required to have received their second COVID vaccine shot no later than December 20th.
So there you have it, both sides, but you heard the passion of some parents. And there was a study that was done, I believe it was in Israel. They looked at the Pfizer vaccine in particular, and it showed that young boys in particular who received the Pfizer vaccination, there was a higher incidence of myocarditis, which is an inflammation of the heart. And once the heart is damaged, it's damaged for life for a lot of these kids. So you could see some parents being concerned about that. It's just so strange how we got to this juncture. It really is. Vaccine mandates, you know, they're being placed either by states or by employers. They're having huge impacts, especially on healthcare. I saw several of them, in fact. And I know this is affecting you. We've talked about it many times over the past several weeks. North Carolina, there was a hospital system there that fired. They fired 175 of their workers. Can you imagine that? My heart goes out to anybody who loses their job. You know, you all have expenses. You all have others, you know, that may depend on you. They don't want the vaccine for whatever the reason. It could be I had a physician actually send me an email talking about how we should all be conscientiously objecting to anything tainted with aborted cell lines. And of course, and I don't want to go down this path right now because we've done it before, but we know what the church has said, the USCCB and the Pope said, hey, the remoteness to that act is far enough to do that. But some people are saying, no, we should not take something like this and demand an ethical vaccine. But, you know, people have a lot of objections, whether it's moral, whether they're concerned about myocarditis or health concerns, whatever it might be. So in North Carolina, 175 workers at that hospital system are out on the street. This came after Novavax Health suspended not 175, not 275, but 375 of their workers for not getting the shots. Around 200 of them, I should say, decided to comply with the demand. So in New York, 83,000, and you heard me right, 83,000 health workers are at risk of being fired for not getting fully vaccinated. 83,000. It's a huge number. We'll see what unfolds. So what should you expect from staff shortages in the state of New York due to the vaccine mandate? Let me share this with you. This comes from, here's what a Staten Island University Hospital CT scan technician, a guy named John Matlin, had to say. He was on Fox News.
This is a man-made crisis. They're saying goodbye to so many hospital staff, and in their place they're bringing in, as you mentioned, retirees and National Guard. Will those type of reinforcements be able to handle our healthcare system, or what kind of compromise are we now facing?
So there's many ways to look at this. So they could eventually be up to speed to do that, but they have to get through that process. If you're a nurse and you transfer, say, from a floor nurse to the ER, you have months of being preceptored. So you still have to learn the ropes in your own facility. So we're getting people from out of state. We're getting people that have been retired for many years. And they're even saying different from foreign countries with the similar licensure that they're going to be putting people in the mix. And all of this, again, is in the name of health. And it's a man-made emergency that they're signing up for, essentially.
All right, so there you have it. I mean, this is going to continue to play out for the days ahead. And, of course, we're seeing people looking for work as well. I saw a story today. If you're unemployed in New Jersey, you've been waiting for maybe a good reason to return to work. Well, the state legislature there is going to give you a reason under a new program called Return and Earn. Check this out. People who get a job through it, not just their first paycheck, right? But also, you're going to get a $500 bonus from the state. You're going to get a $500 bonus. Small businesses that use the program to find new employees are going to get $10,000 in wage subsidies as long as the employees are getting paid at least $15 an hour. So put that on your radar if you're a small business or if you're looking for a job. You might get a $500 bump there. That's not bad. And, of course, with the end of the federal weekly unemployment benefit of $300, something that ended on Labor Day, there are a lot of people still working, looking for work. Yet I still see employment signs, people wanting to hire all over the place. In fact, I was in a car with my wife. We passed through a city recently, and I stopped to get a cup of coffee. I think it was at McDonald's. They had like a $300 signing bonus to work at McDonald's. So, help is hard to come by. But instead of offering incentive to get people back to work, there's some politicians, they want to offer a fourth stimulus payment. Now, you might be glad about that. You might be saying, wait a minute, this is not helping small businesses. We can't get people to work, right? A fourth stimulus payment? Is that a good idea? There's a petition on a website called change.org. It was signed by more than 2 million people calling for a monthly $2,000 check from the government. You imagine that? $2,000 a month. You know what that's called? It's called UBI, Universal Basic Income. And what would that do? Well, it would dig a deeper hole for our country. It would only add to our federal debt, making it even deeper. And it will deter people from, wanting to go to work. A lot of people say, I'd rather stay home and go and work. I'm not going to put as many hours in. So, look, we're seeing the ripple effect of this, aren't we, on so many different levels. If you are if you're a person who waits at the last minute to do your Christmas shopping, COVID may impact that as well. And I'm not just talking about people who are working in stores, but sending packages to anyone for Christmas this year. You're going to have some problems. Don't procrastinate. According to NPR, the post office is going to be raising rates and they're going to be slowing down their delivery. About 60% of first class mail will not be impacted, nor will a vast majority of periodicals. But if you are sending a letter or a card long distance, expect delays. All right. The packages will also be delayed. The post office is moving toward a more ground-based delivery system rather than air. And, of course, that's where this delay is coming in. So that's some of the impact that COVID is having on your world. But I want to get back to this issue I started with today because I think this is an important one. We talk about the, possible inflation. We talk about our national debt. Congress is still debating that $1.2 trillion infrastructure bill as well as that $3.5 trillion spending bill. And how that all works out, your guess is as good as mine. We'll see how, it ultimately pans out. But we could have, there is the possibility of a government shutdown starting on Friday if it doesn't work out. I'm sure they're going to make it work. But let's put this into perspective for a minute. That $3.5 trillion, it's getting most of the attention since it's got most of the money. Recently, one congressman and one president said that, this bill should get passed because it's really not, going to cost anything, right? It's not going to really be spending any money. I'm not sure where they went to school to come up with a statement like that, right? What does that even mean, right? What does that even mean? The New York Times is reporting that in order to fund that $3.5 trillion package, some Democrats are proposing a tax on carbon dioxide. And that tax would be placed on all kinds of fossil fuels except for gasoline. But apparently Democrats want to make sure that, you know, it wouldn't impact families earning less than $400,000 a year in order to sustain the president's promise. But it all depends on whether a couple of senators are, you know, going to go along with Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona, Joe Manchin of West Virginia. And you know, I would imagine that, you know, Senator Manchin voting on a higher tax on coal is not going to go over well with his constituents. So I don't see that happening. But Andrew Wheeler, who's the former Environmental Protection Agency administrator during the Trump administration, he's now a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation, is joining me today to give us some perspective on what we might see, whether or not you will receive a carbon tax. Good to have you with me today, Andrew. Thanks for joining me.
Absolutely. Great to be on your show. Thank you.
Thank you so much. So, I mean, a carbon tax, explain it to me if you could. How does it work? They say it's not on gasoline. It could be as much as $1,500 in additional taxes. How serious is the proposal, and what will it look like?
Well, you know, they're not being honest if they say it's not on gasoline, because it would be on oil, which is, of course, where you get gasoline from. So you would put that tax on any form of carbon, including coal, oil, natural gas, and it would be to the producer. So the tax would go to the producer of the, you know, the oil companies, the natural gas companies, the coal companies. Right. That's going to be passed on to the consumer, to the American public. So what they're saying they would do is try to calculate how much, for example, your electricity bill might go up if you're below a certain income level. And it's not $400,000. It's a lot lower than that. What they would do is give you a rebate for your for the increase in electricity prices that you pay. But what they don't count is, you know, the restaurant that you go to is going to have to pay higher electricity prices. The stores where you buy your clothes or your groceries are going to have to pay higher electricity prices. So all of those costs will be built into the products and the goods that you purchase. So it's going to, everything will go up. You might, if you make less money, you might be able to get some sort of rebate check from the government, but it's not going to cover all of your increased costs.
It's such a good point, you know, because everybody looks at this so linearly, but the reality is, I mean, oil, right? Carbon. I mean, think of how many things we use that are plastic. And you're right. Think of all the other industries that are going to have higher costs, and that's going to get passed along to the consumer. So, you know, whether you make a certain threshold or not, you're going to pay more, either directly or indirectly. So where did this $400,000 number come from? I know that's the president's number. Nobody who earns less than that will see their taxes go up. What about that number and their attempt to try to say, hey, we're honoring that?
Well, I mean, I guess they would be honoring it if your income tax doesn't go up, but they're going to tax everything else that you purchase and buy. I mean, they already in the $1 trillion, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, they have what's called a Superfund tax on chemicals. So there's going to be a surcharge on all chemicals. Chemicals are the precursor for plastics. So if you buy anything that contains a chemical, like not just your household chemicals under your kitchen cabinet, your bathroom cabinet, but if you buy anything that contains plastic, the price of those products will also go up. So even though they're, you know, he may be honoring his promise not to increase taxes on people who make less than $400,000, he's only talking about the income tax. He's not talking about the other taxes and fees that we all pay and that end up getting passed on to the consumer and to the family. And taxes like that, a carbon tax, it is very regressive. It hits low-income families the hardest. It hits senior citizens and anyone on a fixed income. If you make less than around 20, they update it every year. I think the last numbers I looked at were from 2 years ago. If you make less than $25,000 a year, over a third of your disposable income goes to energy costs. So if you just think about that, a third of your take-home pay goes to putting gasoline in your car or paying for your heating or cooling in your house or your apartment, a third of your income going to that. If they're increasing the cost, the price of energy, they're hitting everybody, no matter how much you make. You know, you mentioned the size of these bills. I have a hard time grasping $1 trillion. I just did a little search, and, you know, to put it in perspective, 1 million seconds is 11 and a half days. 1 billion seconds is 31 years. And 1 trillion seconds is 31,000 years.
Wow.
And we're talking about a bill that's going to cost $3.5 trillion. It's going to impact everyone.
It's just so crazy. It frustrates me to no end. It almost seems anti-American, like they want to destroy the economy, ultimately, burden not just this generation, but future generations with an unsustainable debt. I don't get it. This carbon tax, another thing that we see, coming possibly, another thing they want to do to help pay for this $5 trillion spending bill that they want. If the tax goes through, does this become a permanent tax? Can it be reversed? What are we looking at?
Well, it becomes permanent, just like the income tax or other taxes. Occasionally you get, a president, and in our history, it's almost always been a Republican president, like President Trump, who goes in and reduces people's taxes. They call the 2017 tax bill that President Trump got through, a gift to millionaires, because they do pay,
right.
They end up paying more in taxes, but as a percent, it was low income as families under, I think it was 100,000, that got a higher percent back on their taxes than people at the top end of the scale. It really was a very fair tax break across the board. But this carbon tax is just one of the things that they're considering in the $3.5 trillion. They also have, they already include it. They're still debating whether or not to put a carbon tax, but they've already included in the bill, for example, on the oil and gas industry, increasing the royalty rate from 12% to 20%, including the minimum bid for BLM from $2 an acre to $10 an acre. That's going to be passed on. So that already is going to be passed on into higher gasoline prices. So if they figure out some way of doing a carbon tax without hitting gasoline, they're already hitting gasoline in the bill through the royalty rates and the minimum bids for the drilling on BLM lands. So the bill already increases oil and gas.
And I only have a moment or two left here. Just final thought here. How likely is it that this carbon tax will become part of this bill? Do you think they're going to be able to push that through?
I think it's very possible. I think a lot will depend upon Senator Manchin. West Virginia is dependent upon coal and natural gas, and it will hit his industries particularly hard. But again, those costs aren't just paid by the industry. They're passed on to the consumer. Ultimately, it's a pass-through to the consumer.
So is the government trying to force a transition from carbon-based fuels to renewable energy? Is that really the government's job? How do you view that?
Absolutely. That's exactly what they're doing. They're trying to transition to renewables at a faster rate than I believe our economy or even the technology can handle. They're talking about 50% electric vehicle cars by 2030. We don't mine enough of the rare earth minerals that go into producing the batteries for the electric vehicles. And I'm all in favor of more research and more electric vehicles, but I'm not in favor of a government mandate or a program that says we have to get to 50% by a certain date, because we don't have the technology and we don't have the materials to get us there that quickly.
Well, I am so grateful for your insight and your expertise. Andrew, thank you for your time and for all you do.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you can check out more. Go to the Heritage Foundation. He's a visiting fellow there. And, of course, former Environmental Protection Agency administrator during the Trump administration. Let's hope that our legislators get this right. Stay with me. There's a major cardinal or major archbishop calling for prayer and fasting for Nancy Pelosi.
Your life.
Your life.
Your values. Connected.
Connected.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, I've got something really exciting to share with you. It has me fired up. You know how much I believe in the power of prayer to change things. I really understand the power of fasting to amplify that prayer. And we've seen the fruit of it over and over again. I've been talking a lot about this lately. And I just heard something this morning. And I want to bring it to your attention, something that you can do. We all decry the problems in the culture. I just got done talking about the almost $5 trillion spending spree that we're going to see, what it means for the country. We were talking about all the problems in the culture. We talked about the Women's Health Protection Act the other day. We're in this fight for life. You go through the litany of things, this gender indoctrination of our kids, the attack on the family. The list goes on. What can we do? If you're like me, you get frustrated. And I often say to my wife, thank God. I am so grateful that the Lord has at least given me a microphone so I can at least call people to action and try to speak some truth, bring some clarity to some of these issues. But more than anything I can say is what you can do personally. And I really believe that with one day of prayer, just one day of prayer, we can do more to transform the hearts of our politicians, to transform this nation, to end war, to bring peace, to see the fruit of our prayer than any military, any think tank, any politician could ever do in a year of their talk and their efforts. Prayer changes things. It changes things in a powerful way. Let me tell you what's going on here, and I'm going to call you to action. I think this is a wonderful thing to get behind. You already know the so-called Women's Health Protection Act. I've been talking about this for a couple weeks now. It's a bill that passed the House, and it would lift all the restrictions on abortion across the country, right? It's a horrible, horrible act. It's all sanitized. Look at those beautiful words. Who doesn't want women's health, right? Who doesn't want a Women's Health Protection Act? That sounds good. It is a decadent, it is an evil bill is what it really is. And more than just lift all restrictions on abortion across the country, it actually is much worse because it would forbid states from imposing any restrictions, and it would actually force Catholic healthcare systems. Every Catholic in this country should be outraged over this. It would force Catholic healthcare systems and professionals to perform abortions amongst whatever other provisions they put out. So the bill has actually been around for a few years, never even been brought to the House floor because it never would have gotten passed, right? Well, what happened? Let's just look back, turn the hands of time back just slightly, right? The Supreme Court declined to hear the case against the Texas heartbeat law, right? So what happens? The House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, and Joe Biden too, right? The president, two Catholics saying, oh, Joe Biden, I'm going to throw the weight of the federal government against the state of Texas. What did the Speaker of the House say? Well, she says, you know what? I'm bringing this bill forward in an attempt to get back now at Texas. The great Archbishop from San Francisco, Archbishop Salvatore Cordiglione, he's actually her bishop. And we've had him on in the past. We've talked about Nancy. We've talked about excommunication. We've talked about, praying for her conversion. He said, and I've shared this with you earlier in the week, that this action, right, this bill that just got passed, we're talking child sacrifice. And he says, this type of legislation, one would expect from a devout Satanist, not a devout Catholic. That's what the Archbishop said, referring to Nancy Pelosi and the action that we just saw. Surely the type of legislation one would expect from a devout Satanist, not a devout Catholic. So if you don't remember, Nancy Pelosi, when this was done, I won't share with you what she said. I'll let Nancy share it with you. Here is Speaker Pelosi as the House, right after the House passed the Women's Health Protection Act.
I want to thank Judy Chu for her leadership, Congress in, Congress out, but now majority and a president and the Democratic Senate by passing the women, her leadership in introducing again and again and advocating the Women's Health Protection Act. I come to this as a Catholic, mother of five, in 6 years and 1 week, and with the joy that all that meant to us, but with the recognition that it was my husband and I, our decision. It was our decision. And we should not, in this body or in that court, be making decisions for the women in America. What the Supreme Court did was cowardly, a cowardly, dark of nice decision, to allow that bill to go into effect.
Well, what's so cowardly, Grandma Pelosi, Mother Pelosi? You have five children. I'm sure you're a good mother. I'm sure you love those children that you've had, right? But what's cowardly? I'd love to have her explain this. And if you're listening, Speaker Pelosi, please call in. Put you right at the top of the list here. I'd love to talk to you. What's cowardly about protecting a child in the womb when its heart is beating? What's cowardly about that? I think it's noble. I think it's heroic. You know, Archbishop Cordiglione, he sees it as well. I mean, I love what he said. This type of legislation you'd expect from a devout Satanist. Why? Because this is what Satanism is about. They worship the high altar of human sacrifice, of abortion. This is their sacrament. The culture of death sacrament is abortion. This shouldn't come from a devout Catholic. She led with that. I'm a Catholic. I'm a mother. I can't tell women what to do. So what the Archbishop has done, he's called you. He's called you and me to pray and to fast for Congress to do the right thing, right? And vote this bill down. But Congress went ahead. They passed it. So now what's he doing? After a lot of personal prayer, he says, okay, you know, Congress went ahead anyway. What we need to do, and this is so unique, I've never seen this happen before. He launched a new initiative. And I hope every bishop in every diocese that has radical politicians like this will do the same thing. He launched an initiative that is truly unique. It's called the Rose and Rosary for Nancy campaign. The Rose and Rosary for Nancy campaign, okay? And, you know, the Nancy is the you know, in the title, of course, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, but the initiative is something that actually came from the Benedict XVI Institute that he started there. And it's unique because, as far as you know, no bishop has ever called, not that I'm aware of, and somebody can correct me, for a prayer campaign to convert a single heart, the heart of a single politician. He wants the nation, he wants us to pray for the conversion of Nancy Pelosi's heart. Can you imagine how many rosaries are going to be lifted up for her? Can you imagine how many people are going to fast? Can you imagine the graces that this woman will be inundated with? Of course, she has free will. She can choose to reject or accept them. But I believe, as I said when I began, in the power of prayer. Because of her unique position as a Catholic and of course, a Speaker of the House, and because of her repeated public stands in favor of abortion, I think she needs these prayers. And you and I can decry the problems with Nancy or President Biden or Congress or all these other things. It's easy to vent and to get angry and to use our words. The bishop, Archbishop Cordiglione, is saying, hey, I call you to do something even greater, something that will have a profound impact, and that is prayer, because she really needs the prayers, not only because of her impact on public policy, but because she's our sister in Christ. And it's her heart and it's her soul that's at risk here. I'm joined right now by the executive director of the Benedict XVI Institute, Maggie Gallagher. And Maggie, it's a delight to have you with me. Good afternoon.
Well, thank you so much, Drew. It's great to be with you. And I'm so grateful that you're calling attention to what Archbishop Cordiglione is doing, because, damn, it's hard to keep up with that guy. And also, when an archbishop leads like this, it's really important that we show the world he has followers, I think. So thank you.
Yeah, it's such a simple idea, but I think it's going to bear so much fruit. I am such a prayer warrior. I believe so much. I've seen the fruit of prayer. I believe in it. And I just love the idea he's saying, okay, then let's pray. Let's pray for her conversion. Give me a little background on this. I mean, I'm curious. How did the idea come into being, and what does the rose part of the title mean? We know what Nancy means, but fill us in on the backstory here.
Well, you know, I really can't speak for the Archbishop, although I work with him pretty closely, as you know. The key to this is really the op-ed that he published in the Washington Post in early September, if you want to know his thinking, in which he said bishops have an obligation to intervene when Catholic politicians, mm-hmm. you know, especially publicly. This is something that both, particularly Nancy, has done over and over again. She keeps speaking as a Catholic and, you know, contravening the core teachings of the Church, which is simply that it's wrong to kill innocent human life. It's science that tells us that the unborn in the mother's womb is, in fact, a human being, a unique living human being. And it's God that tells us we have no right to take human life, innocent human life. So, but in that op-ed, you know, he reached back and started, and this was, I can tell you, his idea, nobody else's, to the last time an archbishop publicly excommunicated lay people for opposing church teaching. And that was Louisiana New Orleans Archbishop Rummel in the early 60s who excommunicated three prominent local Catholics who opposed the desegregation of Catholic schools and organized to oppose them. So it's not just that they had an opinion, it's that they acted on that opinion to frustrate the church's teachings and its own abilities to run its own institutions, which is exactly what Nancy Pelosi is doing right now. It's not only that she has an opinion that's wrong, it's pretty rare for the church to excommunicate lay people for heresy, but she's now taking actions that both lead directly to the murder of innocent human life, to child sacrifice, as he said, but will also interfere with Catholics doing things like helping take care of sick people without participating in abortion. It's really an extraordinarily aggressive act in response to the politics of this time. So I think it's fair to say that he is looking for ways to reach Nancy's heart and soul, because she is his parishioner and our brother and sister by baptism in Christ. He cares about her soul, and he cares about her witness, which is a very bad teaching to other Catholics and is clearly, just speaking of other Catholics in Congress, not to mention women in crisis pregnancies who may be tempted to do the wrong thing because of what she says and what she's done. He's looking for a way to focus public attention on her as his parishioner, as the second most prominent Catholic in America, in a way that, as Pope Francis told us last week, if the issue of excommunication comes up, and I'm not speaking here about, well, I don't know what the Archbishop is going to do about that or what he's going to do about that, but we need a loving approach, a pastoral approach. It's really easy to get mad at our politicians and hate them. And if you talk about the hard teachings of the Catholic Church, I was just thinking about this, Drew. Yes, you know, for many people, especially the young, the sexual teachings of the church may be hard teachings, but there's nothing harder than, you know, do good to those who do you wrong. You know, love your enemy, which means they're not your enemy. They're another beloved child of Christ that you're calling back to the right path. So I think this is just a beautiful way. And I'm going to stop talking, Drew. I know I talk too much.
No, but, Maggie, let me pick up on a point here, though, because I only have a couple moments here. Couple things. I mean, the bishop is also asking not just to pray a rosary for Nancy. What's it, once a week? But he's asking people to fast, especially on Fridays, and that could be a major sacrifice for some people. So I know he sees Nancy having a maternal heart. I love that fact he's her shepherd and he cares about her immortal soul. And we know the impact she has on the country. So we're all in this together. In addition to prayer, in addition to fasting, he also wants a rose. So what's the call to action? How can people participate?
Go to BenedictInstitute.org and sign up. We've pre-ordered 1,000 roses. We need at least 1,000 of you to sign up to send a rose, which he says, I'm inviting all Catholics to join in a massive and visible campaign of prayer and fasting for Speaker Pelosi. Commit to praying one rosary a week and fasting on Fridays for her conversion of hearts. Wow. He says, please sign up for the Rose and a Rosary for Nancy campaign at BenedictInstitute.org, and a rose will be sent to her this Friday, the Feast of St. Teresa of Lisieux, as a symbol of your prayer and fasting for her. So that's why we want them by Friday. This will be an ongoing campaign, but we'd like to kick off, you know, a rose on the feast day of St. Teresa of Lisieux is a sign that your prayers will have been noticed in heaven.
I'd love to see 1,000,000 roses. Wouldn't that be nice?
Well, if you sign up, we'll send them. I'd like to see that every time she goes out in public, someone steps up to her and hands her a rose and says, "We're praying for you, Nancy. Come home."
I love it. So, what's the web address one more time if we could do that? If anyone wants to sign up and commit to that rosary,
BenedictInstitute.org. There's a big pink banner on the top. You can't miss it if you go to BenedictInstitute.org.
Well, Maggie, thank you. Tell His Excellency, I miss talking to him today. Look forward to having him back on. He's welcome here anytime, okay? And keep up your great work. I'm really grateful for it.
Thank you. I know this is going to be a really big help, and thanks to all of your listeners who are going to BenedictInstitute.org right now.
So go there now, BenedictInstitute.org. Sign up for that rose. Make that commitment to pray and fast for Speaker Pelosi. It's charitable. It's merciful. It really is a good thing to do. And I know our prayers will have a profound impact on her. Don't forget, you can also pray the rosary every evening. You want to do that rosary once a week? Why not do it every night? 7 p.m. Central with Father Rocky. You can pray the rosary across America. Stay with me. I'm going to take a short pause. When I come back, we'll talk more.
This is the Drew Mariani Show. Listen in to the Chaplain of Divine Mercy.
She's battling breast cancer.
Where we're here for you.
Suffering cystic fibrosis.
Every afternoon at 4 Eastern, 1 Pacific.
Thank you so much.
On Relevant Radio.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Here at the Drew Mariani Show, we don't wave a political flag. We wave the Catholic flag.
Yeah, that's right.
Drew Mariani is here for you on Relevant Radio.
I'm here for you every day. It is great to be here, and especially to pray with you. We're going to pray coming up in about 10 minutes, so be sure and join me for the chaplet if you want to join our spiritual family here. A lot of intentions. I was going through my email last night, and man, a lot of big-time prayers. A lot of people need some extra help, so let's join together. If you're just joining me, I'm going to go to the phones. I'd love to hear your thoughts on Nancy Pelosi and the thought of this prayer campaign. The Archbishop of San Francisco, Archbishop Cordiglione, he is inviting Catholics to join in what is a massive and very visible prayer and fasting campaign for the Speaker of the House. And he just wants you to pray one rosary a week. I would invite you to pray one rosary a day. You know, you pray the chaplet with me every day. I love that. The rosary's on at 7 Central with Father Rocky. You can always pray with him there. But he also wants us to fast on Friday. And Holy Spirit's put on my heart this desire to fast. And I've been doing it with greater frequency. It amplifies your prayer. It vanquishes any fear you may have, any anxiety. And I'll tell you, it brings great peace. So let's pray and let's fast for the conversion of the Speaker of the House. Why not throw President Biden in that mix, right? And any other politician that professes to be a Catholic and yet, you know, governs their behavior in a very opposite way. Let me take a few phone calls. If you want to join me, it's 888-914-9149. Let me go to Illinois first. Bob is listening to us there. Bob, good afternoon.
Drew, your show's awesome. Just want to say that. I'm a Lutheran pastor, and I stand with you guys.
Well, we're all brothers in Christ.
I support you guys, too, financially. And I just wanted to say about Nancy Pelosi. Every time she talks, I know we're going to pray for her. I pray for everybody for their conversion. But every time I hear her talk or Joe Biden, I just picture Satan spreading his wings and saying, well done, my disciples, well done. And it's a horrible thing to support abortion. I'm part of Lutherans for Life, and I stand with you, brother. And your show is awesome. You are a powerful speaker. You have insight, and I appreciate you. And I want to say hi to one of my members that I worship with, Jenny. If you're in there listening to River Gold, God bless you, Jenny. And Drew,
hi, Jenny.
Keep up the great work. Keep
hey,
up
Bob,
the great
thank
work,
you.
Drew.
Yeah, I love it. I believe in unity, and I know we have more in common than we have differences when it comes to our Lutheran and Catholic brothers and sisters, and we're all united in the fight for life and for what is just and what is moral. We're all sons and daughters of God, and so I'm glad you found us. I'm glad you're listening, and thank you for those kind words. I mean it. I really appreciate it. Good to hear from you, Bob.
Thank you.
All right.
Bye-bye.
And I do love that. I mean, don't you love the fact that I say this a lot, that this radio program is not just for Catholics. We have Lutherans, there's Episcopalians, there's Baptists, there are Jewish members who listen to the program. People of all walks of life listen to the program. Why? Because, you know, I think a lot of these fundamental truths, they cross those religious lines of denomination, don't they? I mean, we all know that life is sacred. We know that life has been given to us by God, that it's sacred in the womb from the moment of conception through natural death. We can all agree on that. There's so many other issues that we can certainly agree on. And I'm going to be here for you to try to give you that perspective. My frame of reference, of course, is from the Catholic viewpoint. And I love the teachings that the church has had for 2,000 years. And I invite you, whether you're Catholic or not, to join us every day. Share your perspective and be part of what is a wonderful movement right now to bring truth to a culture that has just grown deaf to it. You know, there's this din of mistruth that is out there. You know, we're in a great battle today, a battle of ideologies and a great spiritual battle as well. And it's good to be shoulder to shoulder with all of you in this. And of course, we will certainly pray together coming up in a moment. Mary Elizabeth in Augusta, Maine, thank you for calling in. Good afternoon.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I just want to make a comment. It sounds like Nancy Pelosi is just an angry woman. Every time she mentions, I've had five kids in 6 years, and today I heard, I've had five kids in 6 years and 1 week. She just sounds very resentful that she's had five kids in 6 years and 1 week because I am Catholic. It's like, you know, I had to do it because I am Catholic. And she just sounds so angry and so resentful. And I think that's the background to all her hatred of...
Well, Mary, I don't know. We don't know her background. I mean, that's the thing. And I appreciate your perspective. It gives us reason, doesn't it, to pray for her even more. I can't imagine a mother not loving her children. You know, I mean, I think if you have that child, just, I couldn't imagine not having any one of the children that God has given me. I'm sure Nancy must feel the same way, but there's clearly an intellectual disconnect. There's clearly a spiritual disconnect from her Catholic faith here when it comes to advocating for policies in this country that are harmful ultimately to women, to innocent life, and really to the country at large. I don't have an answer for it. I don't. I know that sin darkens the mind. It bedims the intellect. And when you begin to champion and advance these types of things, I think if you're not practicing your faith, if you're not in a relationship with the Lord, it's easy to really get lost. So let's pray for Nancy. And I'm so grateful for the Archbishop who's calling us to pray a rosary and to fast for her on Fridays and to do our part. So I'm going to pray for her. She's your sister, my sister, and out of love, I really hope that she comes back. What a beautiful witness to the Catholic faith she could be. What a beautiful witness Joe Biden could be to the Catholic faith as well. Susie in Madison, Wisconsin. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Drew. Thank you. I will definitely sign up with a sister. I'm going to have to look it up because I'm driving in my car. But yes, I think we need to pray for Nancy. I have been praying for her. She used to say, I pray for Joe Biden, and they questioned whether she did or not. I believed her. Not Joe Biden, for Donald Trump. I believe that she was praying for him because I think she's a Catholic. I just think, like I called in before once and said, you are what you hang with. And I think when you hang with a bunch of people, they believe that, and they believe that they're doing what's right. But I think she needs roses. I think she needs prayers. I think Joe needs roses and prayers. And I told the guy that I talked to earlier, I think Andrew Cuomo has plenty of time on his hands right now to be thinking.
You know who else needs him? Governor Hochul of New York needs him as well. Susie, I only have less than a minute. Let me jump into Ophelia. She's actually listening in California. I think that she's from the Diocese of Archbishop Cordiglione. Ophelia, you got about 30 seconds. Let me let you get your comments in, too.
I am a proud parishioner, and I'm so proud to be in Archbishop Cordiglione's Archdiocese. He's amazing. He's bold, and he just constantly holds masses for life and beautiful prayers, and he's been bold. And so we have two other Congress people that are in this archdiocese, so we need to also pray for them. And I challenge every parishioner to ask their priest to include this prayer in their weekly intentions in Mass. We do not hear about it enough in our own masses, in our own churches.
Well said. Thank you, Ophelia. If you want information, go to benedictinstitute.org. That's where you can make your commitment to prayer.